Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Namaskritam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udhirayat Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. Hare Krishna. Reading today from 10th Canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is all of the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Chapter 24, which is Worshipping Govardhan Hill. And we're reading text 19 to 23. And 19 is on the board. One of them is on the board. 19 will be there in a minute. Okay, there we go. 19. Ajvi yai kataram bhavam. Ajvi yai kataram bhavam. Yastu yastvanyam upajivati. Yastvanyam upajivati. Natasmad vindate kshemam. Natasmad vindate kshemam. Jaranarya satiyata. Jaranarya satiyata. Ajivaikataram bhavan. Yastvanyan upajivati. Natasmad vindate kshemam. Jaranarya satiyata. Please chant. Ajivyai kataram bhavam. Natasmad vindate kshemam. Jaranarya satiyata. Ajivyai kataram bhavam. Jaranarya satiyata. Ladies. Ajivyai kataram bhavam. Yasvanyam upajivati. Natasmad vindate kshemam. Jaranarya satiyata. Do all the students, the older girls want to chant together? Yes, together. Good. Your turn. Avjivyai kataram bhavan. Yastvanyan upajivati. Natasmad vindate kshemam. Jaranarya satiyam. Anyone else? You did very well. Thank you for chanting so nicely. Ajivya. sustaining his life. Ekataram, one. Bhavan, entity. Ya, who. Tu, but. Anyam, another. Upajivati, resorts to. Na, not. Tasmad, from that one. Vindate, gains. Shemam, real benefit. Jarat, from a paramour. Nari, a woman. Asati, who is unchaste. Yata, as. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. If one thing is actually sustaining our life, but we take shelter of something else, how can we achieve any real benefit? We would be like an unfaithful woman who can neither achieve any actual benefit by consorting with her paramour. I'll read the purport because we have many verses to read today. Purport. The word shaman means actual prosperity, not merely accumulation of money. Here, Lord Krishna boldly argues that just as a woman who can never achieve actual dignity or enlightenment from an illicit lover, the residents of Vrindavan will never be happy by neglecting the real source of their prosperity and worshipping Indra instead. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the audacity that child Krishna displayed before his father and other elders should be understood as an exhibition of transcendental anger aroused when he saw his eternal devotees worshiping an insignificant demigod. So we have more verses to read, so we'll read them all and then we'll try to put this all in place. So just for our school, visiting school kids who don't know where we're at, Krishna is now seeing all the resident, all the Brahmins in this little village. They're getting a great sacrifice together. But he's noticing it's to worship Indra. Nanda Maharaj has made a sacrifice. He's preparing a sacrifice to worship Indra because Indra gives the rains. So Krishna, he has a plan in mind. So he's giving some arguments here why Nanda Maharaj and all the residents of Vrindavan should stop that arrangement to worship Indra. Stop that. And use all the paraphernalia that they've collected and worship Govardhan Hill instead. So he's trying to convince Nanda Maharaj to stop. So he's giving various arguments. So that's, you're coming in the middle of this argument. So he's arguing with his father, but very nicely. He's not raising his voice. He's just giving some reasons why it's not really worth it. So what he said here is something that's sustaining, something that's giving you life. If you turn your back to that and try to and you worship something else, that doesn't make sense. You should be respectful and grateful to that which is giving you life. So that's the point he's making. He's saying, Indra is not really giving you life. He's not, the rains aren't that important. But it's actually Govardhan Hill that's giving us life because we have so many cows and they're, et cetera, et cetera. And Govardhan Hill is giving the grass and the water and so many things that sustain our cows and our livelihood. So we should express our gratitude towards Govardhan Hill. He hasn't quite said that yet, but he's getting ready to say that. So here's the next verse, okay? Here go in the next series here. Varteta brahmanam vipra. We can chant it together if you'd like to. It'll help. Varteta brahmana vipra rajanyo rakshaya bhuva vaishastu vartate jiva shudrastu dvija sevaya. The translation is, the Brahmin maintains his life by studying and teaching the Vedas, the members of the royal order by protecting the earth, the Vaishya by trade, and the Sudra by serving the higher twice-born classes. And the purport is, after glorifying karma or work, Lord Krishna now explains that what he means by prescribed duties born of one's nature. He was not referring to any whimsical activity, but rather to the religious duties prescribed in the Varnashrama or the Vedic social system. 21. Krishi vani yago rakshak shudiram turyam uchate varta chatur vidhatatra vayam go ritato nisham. Translation: the occupational duties of the Vaishyas are conceived in four divisions: farming, commerce, cow protection, and money lending. Out of these, we as a community are always engaged in cow protection. Yes. 22. Satvam rajasama iti stityupat yuantahetava rajasopatyate vishvam anyonyam vididam jagat. The causes of creation, maintenance, and destruction are the three modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. In particular, the mode of passion creates this universe and through sexual combination causes it to become full of variety. Purport. Anticipating the possible objection that a livelihood based on cows certainly does depend on Lord Indra who supplies rain, Lord Krishna here introduces a mechanistic theory of existence known as atheistic Sankhya. The tendency to attribute exclusive causality to the apparent mechanistic functions of nature is an old tendency indeed. 5,000 years ago, Lord Krishna referred to a doctrine already well known in human society. And this is our last verse for today. Rajasa chodita megha varshantyam buddhi sarvata prajastar eva siddhyanti mahendrai kim karishyati. Impelled by the material mode of passion, the clouds pour down their rain everywhere, and by this rain all creatures gain their sustenance. What has the great Indra to do with this arrangement? Purport. Lord Krishna continues his mechanistic explanation of existence, concluding, Mahendra kim karishyati, who needs the great Indra, since rain sent by the clouds, which in turn are impelled by the mode of passion, is actually producing everyone's food. The word sarvata indicates that the clouds magnanimously send their rain even on the ocean, rocks, and barren land, where there is no apparent necessity for such sweet water. Oma ginati midandasya jinandina sabakaya chaksur umiritam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha mukam karoti vachalam pangam langayate girim yat kripatam aham vande paramananda madhavam shri gurum dinatarinam shri chaitanya ishvaram. Hare Krishna. So, again, Lord Krishna is presenting so many arguments here. He's presenting arguments that we're a little familiar with. Some of us are a little familiar with. These arguments are quite common. He's actually saying that there's no real cause. There's no real person. There's no real supreme person behind everything. Everything's going on mechanically. Did you catch that word? Mechanistic means mechanically. Means like a machine. Machine just goes, the wheels just run, the pulley just goes around the wheel. It's all like a machine. Now, since this is our majority of present live bodies in class, I'm going to divert my attention over here for a little bit, okay? With your permission or without it, huh? Sorry. Okay, so if I was to say that car, let's just say your father's car was right here, okay, or your mother's car was right here, and we say that car, it just works by itself. The motor runs, the wheels turn, everything works by itself. You don't need any person or anything. It just, you turn the key and it goes. Does anybody have anything that they could argue against that? Or what does anything sound a little strange about that argument? Yes, dear. Very good, very good, and very good, very sharp. And actually, where is it even going to go if there's not a person to get in it and start it, right? It's not going to go anywhere. Sometimes when Srila Prabhupada would give that very same, make that very same point, he would say it can sit there for hundreds and hundreds of years and it's just going to rot and rust if there's not a person that gets in it and starts to push it. So sometimes in the course of your life, you'll come up with people who say, there's no God. Everything's happening. The sun's rising. The rains are coming. Everything's coming by chance or by nature. But so we have to use our intelligence and think, whose nature is it? Sometimes one might think that, anyway, I won't use that. I'm sorry. So whose nature is it? Who's controlling? Who's in charge? Just like I see that you're all sitting here so nice and quiet and paying very nice attention. But if your teachers weren't sitting in back of you, encouraging you to sit properly and to stop wiggling, etc., I doubt that you would be in such a neat array for a very long time, or for even half of a second, maybe. So there's someone that's there encouraging you to act in a certain way. So Krishna's, what he's doing, Krishna's trying to encourage the residents of Vrindavan, he's trying to encourage the residents of Vrindavan to not, to change their form of appreciation. He's not encouraging them to become atheistic, but he's encouraging them to give their appreciation to that which is giving them sustenance. So he's expressing that we need to develop an attitude of gratitude to those who are and that which is sustaining us. An attitude of gratitude is very important to develop because oftentimes we take things for granted. I don't know if that happens very often in your life, but sometimes you just take things for granted. But actually, it's very important to see everything. My breakfast was ready by my good mother who got up way earlier than me to get me ready. So many things. We can develop an attitude of gratitude. So Krishna is trying to get the residents of Vrindavan to not worry about Indra, who he says is a distant demigod, but to actually worship Govardhan Hill, who is sustaining our life, who is giving all that the cows needs for their maintenance and sustenance and growth, so they'll give milk and we'll be able to take care of them so nicely. So he's encouraging them in so many ways like that. When Srila Prabhupada, and in 1969, way long ago, when Srila Prabhupada was giving lectures on these very same verses, one of the points that he was making was, we have to do our work. So many times there's so much work to be done, and we have different people have different tendencies. Some people have tendencies, they have tendency to study and learn and read books. And other people have tendencies to take things apart and figure out how things are working. And other people have tendencies just to boss people around. Oh, how can I say that? They have a tendency to take charge of things. They have a take charge attitude. So we need all of those kind of people. And then there's other people who just like to help. They just like to help everyone else. So much needs to get done, and maybe I can help. You know, I don't want to take too much responsibility. That's not my thing. But I can help. I can help with the festivals. I can help make garlands. I can do this. I can do that. So there's different tendencies, and every single tendency has its perfection, and every single thing has some difficulty. Every action, every work has its difficulty. And if we avoid the work because of the difficulty, that's not, Krishna's explaining, that's not a good thing. He said even fire, gave the example of fire. Even fire, we're so dependent on fire for cooking, for heating, for this and for that. But fire has smoke, and that's not the most pleasant part of the fire. We like to get the heat, we like to get the light, But sometimes if the smoke gets in your eyes, or up your nose, it's not very good. But doesn't mean because there's some difficulty there that you reject it. No, you just learn how to utilize it properly. So that's one of the points that Krishna is trying to make in this series of arguments, getting ready to tell Nanda Maharaj, put all that aside and take that paraphernalia and worship Indra. So because I've been reading a little bit in Nectar Devotion and recently studying Srisha Upanishad. So in Srisha Upanishad, in the beginning of Srisha Upanishad, Srila Prabhupada is explaining in his introductory lecture, there's a lecture there that he gave in London, and there he's explaining how the Vedas, they're Shabda Brahman, they're transcendental sound vibration. They're beyond the range of material sound vibration. Material, and then he compares, what's material sound vibration? Material sound vibration or persons, they can never give perfect knowledge because they have four defects. By any chance, well, you're just starting school, so I won't ask you what the four defects are. So I'll give you mid-semester, and then we'll ask you what the four defects are. But the four defects are that the every conditioned soul has a tendency to commit mistakes, become illusioned, imperfect senses. What's the fourth one? Cheating. Yeah, here's an example of cheating. Because Prabhupada gives the example of cheating as someone will say, this is like this, this is like this. But they don't really know what it is. They just talk because they don't have it proved. But in comparison to that, spiritual sound vibration, it doesn't come from material source. It doesn't come from people who have those tendencies, those defects. And therefore, spiritual sound vibration comes from beyond this material universe and is purifying to hear. So one of the reasons that Krishna appears in this world is so that he can perform his pastimes with his devotees, so that devotees like you, aspiring devotees like you and I, will have something to talk about. We'll have something to hear about. Because we can hear about Krishna's pastimes, and then we can talk about them. And that way, our hearts, minds, and activities will become purified in that way. The thing about understanding God or understanding Krishna is you can never understand him by your brain, by your direct perception. Krishna's way beyond that. God's way beyond the perception of the senses. Just like Srila Prabhupada explains how the senses, if the lights were out, if it was dark out at night, we wouldn't even practically be able to see your hand before your face. Have you ever been out on a dark night when the moon hasn't come up? You're just going out, say, and you can't even see where the car is, and it's right in your driveway, and you can't even see it. So what good are your senses? Your eyes are there, they're open. So your senses are limited. So with your senses, we can never get to perfect knowledge. We have to get perfect knowledge from people who have heard perfectly or from the transcendental source. So that's why we read Srimad Bhagavatam every day. That's why we hear Krishna's pastimes, to get in touch with transcendental or perfect sound vibration. And that is the path that is perfect. For someone to try to think that I'm going to figure out the cause of the universe on my own, or ascending, climbing up the stairs of knowledge to figure out on my own what the source is, they'll never come for that ascending process. But perfect knowledge comes down. So Krishna, now you might argue, someone who's a little more familiar with this exact section of the Bhagavatam, Krishna's giving some information here that's not exactly 100% correct. He's kind of only given half the argument in one sense. But he's doing it, why? Because he's a funny person. He's clever. Krishna can do many things with one activity. He can achieve many things. In fact, in Nectar Devotion, one of his transcendental qualities is exactly that, that he's clever. That by doing one thing, he can achieve many results. So by speaking this so-called mechanistic or mechanical or atheistic philosophy, he's achieving many things. One thing he's doing is getting Indra very angry. Another thing that he's doing is that the residents of Vrindavan, who are completely in love with Krishna, they're totally captivated by whatever he says and does. Not that they're convinced, not they're not convinced at all towards atheism, but they're so in love with Krishna that whatever he says, they just accept it. There's a quality of Krishna called Vavaduk. Vavaduk means that he's a pleasing talker. Pleasing talker, once when he was telling actually one wife of the cowherd men that were listening to Krishna speak like this, spoke to one of her friends, and she said, just see how pleasing the words are that Krishna speaks. It was just like he was pouring nectar in their ears. He was speaking so pleasingly that all the residents of Vrindavan just were captivated by his words. So that's one of the qualities of Krishna, that he's a pleasing talker, and he's very clever. He can do many things. And so, in fact, a lot of those transcendental qualities of Krishna were exhibited in this pastime. So, Haribol, thanks very much for coming. See you next Friday. Hare Krishna. So that was one of the things that Krishna was exhibiting, many of his transcendental qualities in these pastimes, that he was enchanting the residents of Vrindavan with what was described in the purport, one of the purports, as a doctrine already well known in human society. So these tendencies for atheistic arguments have been in society for thousands of years. But when one, even Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he's explaining in 16th chapter how the divine and demoniac, how the demoniac person thinks that there's nothing in control, that there's no God in control, that everything is produced from sex desire only, and that one, there's no higher cause than that. So he's explaining those things in Bhagavad Gita so that we can actually understand the real position of what's going on. Sorry. Yeah, Haribol. So, if somebody had a more controlled mind, they would be able to keep fixed, but mine's a little distracted here, sorry. In verse 19, in the purport, they're saying, the word shaman means actual prosperity, not merely accumulation of money. So, the tendency is in modern society to think that just to accumulate money, that's actually real wealth. But Srila Prabhupada has trained us up that real wealth is transcendental qualities. Real wealth is transcendental knowledge. Real wealth is learning how to act in loving devotion. That's our real wealth. The wealth of the Brahmins is tapasya. But tapasya for what? For gaining an increase of their devotion. So that's where we're at. Anyway. Anybody who have any comments? I'm ready to stop. Sorry. There is one thing that I wanted to mention that came up in classes, in some previous classes from Trivikram Prabhu's question about Duryodhan. Remember those? So in Garga Samhita, in chapter 3, it's in the 7th canto part of Garga Samhita, there's a story, it's chapter 2. There's the story of who Duryodhan was in his previous life. So I won't read the whole thing. Just read the end paragraph that's pertinent to who Duryodhan was in his previous life. So just to give you a little... It's the story of how the demigods approached the Lord to come to the earth, to manifest on the earth for protecting his devotees. So here's a little bit of the story. So at one point, let's see. I'm going to read here. Lord Baladeva, appearing as the thousand-faced Sesha, departed while being worshipped by the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharas. Baladeva's charioteer, Sumati, stood ready with the horses tied to his chariot. The Lord's other associates also assembled, ready to execute his mission. In other words, the Lord had already told most of his associates, now you leave from here and go to the earth and take birth in the cowherd family and the family in Dwarka and Mathura and in that area, and you assist me in those pastimes. He had already said that, and he was getting ready himself to get on his chariot and go there. So Lord Sesha went to Vaikuntha Loka, where he merged into the body of Sankarshan. Then, surrounded by his attendants, Lord Sesha proceeded to Patala Loka, where he was surrounded by the best of the serpents who offered him various services, such as fanning him with whisk and offering him betel nuts. Lord Sesha was surrounded by the best of the sages who could see that the entire universe was situated upon one of his hoods, just like a tiny mustard seed. The Lord then said, I shall incarnate on the earth to remove her burden. All of you, my assistants, should appear in the Yadu dynasty to help me carry out my mission. Addressing his charioteer, Sumati, the Lord said, you should remain here. Do not be aggrieved. Whenever I am in need of you for waging war, as soon as you are thought of, appear before me with my chariot, having a flag of a palm tree, and bring my weapons, the plow and club. After being addressed in this way, all of the serpents, demigods, rudras, and other celestial beings departed for their own abodes. Then, addressing the daughters of the serpents, Lord Sesha said, I know all of your intentions. Do not worry. Engage in the performance of austerities, and later on, you will be born in the houses of the cowherd men of Raj. At that time, I will fulfill your desire by performing a rasa dance on the bank of the Jamuna. And so here's the part about Duryodhana. Then Kali, the king of the Nivikatakavachas, spoke to Lord Sesha, O Lord, kindly give me your order. What should be done by me? I would like to follow you because feeling your separation would be too painful. Lord Ananta was delighted, and he instructed his devotee Kali, not Kali, the personification of Kali Yuga, but Kali was his name. You can accompany me to Bharatvarsa. You will be born as Duryodhan, the son of King Dhritarashtra in the dynasty of the Kauravas. You will become famous as a great ruler of men, and at that time I will impart to you the art of fighting with a club. Sri Pradipak Muni said, O Duryodhan, this is the secret of your true identity. You do not understand this because of the mysterious workings of the Lord's supreme illusory energy. So no one can supersede the Lord's illusory energy. Even in the past, if the Lord wants somebody to be illusioned, nobody can come out of that illusion. So even the Lord's potency of illusion is there, as seen even in great personalities such as Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva once became bewildered by the potency of Krishna. And here we're seeing Indra. It's not that Indra is a demon per se. Indra, of course, is a great devotee of the Lord, but when Krishna wants to do his exhibit some pastimes, he can illusion anyone. Even Lord Balaram, we read previously in the pastime when Brahma stole the cows and the calves. Brahma was illusioned by the potency of Krishna, and Balaram also, who is Krishna himself, was illusioned, and he didn't see that Krishna had expanded himself as the cows and the cowherd boys and the calves. Even for a whole year, Balaram didn't notice. So that's the supreme power of the Lord. Yes, Trivikram? Yes? Why don't you speak into the mic? Why is that? Is he not the personality of Kali?
I'm passing it to him, but this is just...
I was wondering why you were doing
a
that.
A detail that you introduced that explanation of Duryodhana by saying that Kali, and then you said, but it's not the personality of Kali. So if it were the personality of Kali, that would make a lot of sense of Duryodhana's mindset. But if it's not the personality of Kali, was he a good guy, bad guy, or what kind of Kali was that?
I don't know. I have to say that right off the bat. Otherwise, the difference between teacher and cheater is just a few letters, you know.
In the Mahabharata, it's stated.
Can I just say one thing before I forget it, which is a real bad tendency I have also? Because also, as we've seen in many other instances of incarnations incarnating, sometimes partial incarnations take place. So that would be my speculative explanation. But
yeah, very good. In the Mahabharata, it's stated that he's a plenary portion of Kali.
Okay.
Of, you know, the
of like
Kali.
That?
Yeah. My question was, 7 years before this incident, all the demigods went to the milk ocean. That would include Indra too. And they were begging the Lord to come and come on earth and clear the burden.
Okay,
and
just a clarification. 7 years before what? This incident?
Yeah,
of
this
Indra
incident. Because Lord Krishna is about 7 years.
Oh, so you think it only took place 7 years?
So they all went there. And then even when he took board, all the demigods were appearing and so forth. And then now we see that Indra is, I don't know if he's pretending, he's saying that Krishna is just an ordinary boy. You know, it's bewildering, isn't it?
Yes, two things. Just a clarification there. It was way more than 7 years, Sir Prabhu, because he told the demigods that they, because Krishna's time is different from our time. Just like we pray to Krishna, please purify my heart, please make me your pure devotee, please, please, please. And those are very nice prayers. And then we look at our little hand watch and we think, well, come on, I've been praying that prayer for 3 months, 2 years, 4 years, 40 years now, and I'm still got contamination. Are you not listening? Or why are you taking so long? Are you not there? But Krishna is there, and he is working, and he's doing everything. So similarly, when the demigods went to the shore of the milk ocean and wherever they went to pray for the Lord to appear, the Lord made arrangements right away. But the time, as remember in those beginning of those Mahabharata movies, time moves very slowly, but it's happening, you know? But it's happening. The effects of time are there. So those people having to take like Vasudeva or elders or Bhishma, it wasn't just 7 years. It was many years. But anyway, gradually it happened. But now that I said that, oh, so you're questioning why it's bewildering. Is Indra just pretending? So yes, it's bewildering, isn't it? But it's not that we're supposed to figure it out with our mind and our logic and our intelligence. If we can't understand the logic of it, then it's something missing. No, what does Srila Jiva Goswami say? Jiva Goswami says that we need to accept the inconceivable potency of the Lord. It's inconceivable to our puny little mind. This, I was just hearing one of Prabhupada's many lectures. He was saying, you know, Lord Brahma in this universe, he's got four heads. Why? Because this is a very small universe. This is a very small universe. And yet all the workings of this planet are bewildering to us. What to speak of the universe, which we can't even conceive of its size or its potency. And this is a small universe. So that's why as one's heart becomes cleansed, one makes advancement, one doesn't become puffed up with false power or false sense of self, but one becomes more and more humble because the truth becomes revealed and we see we are totally insignificant. But it's amazing that, well, maybe not for you, it's amazing that some of us have any brains at all, even though they're very small, you know? But still, you know, Krishna is so great. He's in the heart of every living entity there and here at that time and this time and all place and all universes, all the breaths of Mahavishnu. He's there, and he has his plan. His plan is for purifying the living entities, all the wayward living entities, the few of us, although we're thinking that we're in the majority, and then again, well, of course, if we think of devotees, even within this majority of living entities here on the planet, we're thinking, oh, there's just a few devotees. But anyway, all the living entities in the universe, they're just a minority. They're just a few people that were foolish enough to turn their backs on the Lord anyway. So, one piece of information that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj gives is that we're in the minority. I forget. Sorry. Gives a lot of information about a lot of things. Oh, that. Thank you, Krishna. That the contamination that we might have traces of contamination within our heart, even though we've made lots of progress, just like the stages of advancement. Still, even up to the stage of prema, or up to the stage of bhava, there's still traces, subtle contaminations from different activities. So sometimes you might see someone who's made quite significant progress in devotional service, but still has some trace of bad qualities. And it gets a little bewildering. How can that be there? So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj says that Krishna leaves that there till he's ready to totally purify it. Just a trace, and it won't be long. That's what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Even if there's some fault there, even if there's a little bit of fault or what appears to be a great big fault, it won't be there for long. So like Indra, even it appears that he's acting in a way, and sometimes it appears that he acts in many foolish ways. It appears that way to us, but Krishna's got many things that he's doing. He's instructing us. He's purifying his dear devotee. Don't forget, so oftentimes, because Srila Prabhupada so kindly has given us the essence, the conclusion, the highest level of conclusion of devotional service, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, and he's given us that so much that oftentimes when we hear that some demigod acts in this way or some demigod acts in that way, we think, why don't they get it together? I mean, you might not think it grossly, but subtly. Think, why don't they get it together like us, like me? Like, we know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like, what's the problem with him? But actually, they're great, great, advanced, greatly purified souls, and they have a role to play or whatever. Even, I mentioned the last class, one of the angas, or limbs of devotional service, don't disrespect the demigods. See them who they are. See them for who they are and the service that they run. Don't disrespect them, but worship them or respect them in their proper attitude, which was exhibited by the Lord in many places and many times. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Any other tweaks or comments, Maharaj?
A tweak.
Thanks.
Or a question, if this is tweakable, so to speak. So Arjuna, we know that was that kind of maya that Arjuna was put into was induced and provoked by Krishna. So the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. But when we hear, you were mentioning that we see, we may think that there's something wrong with, say, Indra's actions. But I was thinking that that's not in the same category of like Krishna putting Arjuna into maya, that Indra actually has some of his own responsibility, not just in this pastime, but he does some very far out things, and we have to be careful not to criticize because he's so powerful. But at the same time,
right,
it's not the same. It's actually, he's going through a process, let's put it like that.
Exactly. Agree. 100% agree. Yeah. It's not all one. The maya is not all one. Yes, dear. I forget your name. You told me it. Okay, hold on for the mic to come over because so many people are listening. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think I have a need for clarification between, if I can say so, the hierarchy between, let's say, demigods and the spiritual master. Because my understanding is the spiritual master should be served, should be treated as if it was God. And my understanding also that Krishna doesn't want to be served directly, And the only way to serve Krishna is to serve the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas as well. And the demigods seem to me not to have that status. So, if I want to rank them in my little brain, do they go in parallel, or there is superiority, or how does it work?
They have, that's a great question. Lakshmi Moni is going to help and answer that. Thank you for asking. We're all in this together. Haribol. Do you have the mic?
I was just minding my own business, making necklaces. The way I understand is that, and sometimes we do see that the demigods are spiritual masters, and by their disciples, they are revered. I mean, what Brahma is the founder of our Sampradaya, so he also had an issue, he got a little bit bewildered a couple of times. So it's not, but from the point of view of the disciple, there's a vision that I by this person, by his guidance, by his sacrifice for me, by his interaction with me, I make spiritual advancement. And so I worship him as good as God. Not as God, but as good as God. Because he's my, just like a child sees the parent as a source of sustenance. And so for the child in Anamaya, there's this he gives me food, therefore he's as good as God, everything, my life depends on this person. So they don't see the mistakes or the blips in the person's existence, because that's the conduit to life. And for us, our spiritual master is also the conduit to life. I often, anyway, that's enough.
Great. Maharaj, would you like to add something to that discussion? Or?
Master, why is the spiritual master equated with demigods if the demigods seem imperfect or something like that?
Yeah.
Sorry, that was basically the
idea.
I don't think I have anything intelligent to say right at this moment.
Okay. Dina Bandapur, would you like to add anything just to that particular discussion, and then to pass the mic to Trivik Ram?
Well, we offer respects to everyone who's in the senior positions. The demigods, they're in senior position. So when we say the spiritual master is the sum total of all the demigods, doesn't mean he's also necessarily imperfect like them, but since he's superior and they're superior, we offer respect to all superiors.
Thank you. Sri Vikram.
Actually, Prabhupada says we offer respect even to an ant, so what does he give demigods?
I was just thinking that the role of the demigods are different. They're like administrators within the material world, but the role of the spiritual master is much different, really. His role is to take us back out of this material world. See? And so his role is special.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. It's a different thing. The demigods have their administrative service that they're doing. They're called sakama. They have desires for material enjoyment, so therefore they want to be in charge or this or that, or so they have some service. But the spiritual master's position is a little different, very different, because his position is to bring us totally out of the material world. Anyway, these things sometimes become more clear as you hear them over and over again. You hear different aspects of it, like a crystal. You hear it from one angle, another piece from another, and then gradually it all comes together. Yes?
I was going to say there's a shloka in 11th Canto. It says, I think Krishna's even speaking it, that deva, anyway, the last two lines are karma sachiva sattvas dinavatsala, that the sattvas are always superior to the demigods because they're dinavatsala. They are very compassionate, whereas it says sachiva means like shadows. The demigods are like shadows. Whatever you do, they just reward you. Whatever you move, they the shadow goes with you. They just interact with your karma, whereas the sadhus are compassionate. They're always superior. I think Krishna's speaking.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Time's up. Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you. Hare Krishna.